You are listening to a streamlined episode of the Punk News Podcast, episode 617. Let's roll. Happy Thanksgiving.
There's a turkey in the house, get him out. Get the turkey out, get him out of the house, get him out. There's a turkey in the house, get him out. Get the turkey out, get him out of the house, get him out. Get turkey out of the house. Get turkey out of the house, get him out. Get the turkey out, get him out. There's a rhino in the room, get him out. Get him out of the room, get the rhino out, get him out. There's a rhino in the room, get him out. Get him out of the room, get the rhino out, get him out. Get rhino out of the room. Get rhino out of the room, get him out. Get the rhino out, get him out.
We're back, and it's just John and M and John, John and M and John. And
yes.
you already had your Thanksgiving in Canada like a month ago, right?
Yeah, it's in October for the harvest.
So do you guys have like Black Friday or anything, or you guys don't do that at all?
We do have Black Friday. I think that's more of like a like an American import, because I remember not having it, and then I remember it kind of showing up. Mm-hmm. So I think that's yeah, we do have it now, though. I mean, that's cool. And I found out we can get the Macy's parade. So, like, I'm going to watch the balloons, because, like, that's fun.
So is your Black Friday the same day as our Black Friday?
Oh, yeah, it's all American.
See, but that's kind of weird, though, because in America, a lot of people have off the day after Thanksgiving. So hypothetically, you go out and shop. But for you guys, it's just a normal Friday, right?
Yeah, it's a Friday and the weekend, and that's it. Yeah, so, it's not a big deal, which is kind of funny, because it's like, it's just, there it is.
So do people like take off for Black Friday, or is it not that nuts? In America, actually, Black Friday isn't as nuts as it was 5 and 10 years ago, because they kind of strangled themselves. And what kind of good idea is they would start like Black Friday, like 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day. So people would like, and so now Black Friday essentially, quote, starts like Monday before Thanksgiving. But it's like, I mean, it's still kind of a big thing, but it's not nearly as big as it was in like the late 90s. In the late 90s and early 2000s, it was like crazy. And now it's just a thing. So I mean, like, do people take off in Canada, or like, what's the deal? Like, if you're going to work on Friday and Black Friday in Canada, like, are like the supermarkets and like, well, not the supermarkets, like the shopping malls are like jam-packed, or is traffic just a little bit busier than usual?
It's usually maybe just like a little busier. It's really not a big deal. There's not a lot of great deals. A lot of people wait for like Cyber Monday, and then you don't have to leave your house, or all you need is an internet connection. So yeah, like, no one really gets as into it. Like, it's a thing, but it's not like somebody's trampled for TV type of thing.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. So anyways, we've got somewhat of a streamlined episode tonight, because it's just me and Em. We're going to be talking about punk rock bowling. We're going to be talking about Thin Lizzy. We're going to be talking about Natalie and the Monarchy, effed up, Ticketmaster, Sloppy Seconds, and maybe even the Misfits and Morrissey. But first, and more.
Yes.
Here's a non-hypothetical, a actual question. And you can tell me where you think I should stand. So here's the deal.
Okay.
You know I'm always on the record hunt. I'm always out snooping out records. And, man, like, I actually was just thinking about this the other day, is I've been collecting records now, like, 25 years. And I love it more than ever, man. So
Yeah.
I probably should like not love it as much as I do, but I love record collecting. I love buying records. I love selling them. I love looking at them. I love it. So anyways, this past week I came across a pretty cool score. The person I bought it from, I don't think that person was a record executive, but I believe they bought this entire collection from a record executive, because all throughout the collection was like promo and advanced copies, unopened promo and advanced copies of like big time records and small time records, like Madonna's first album, radio promo, advance, unopened, but all these different kind of genres. Oh. So like anything from like Madonna to the Dead Milkmen to Public Enemy to 80s stuff, but not like one genre, which suggest, and also some super super rare stuff like promo releases, like 7 inches that like picture 7 inches that were only given to DJs and stuff like that. So it seemed to me that this collection had come from a radio executive type person, or maybe someone in radio itself.
Right.
So I mean, there was a lot of cool stuff in there. Actually, I got like a sealed Gang of Four original press, the first record sealed. I got a Buzzcock Singles Going Steady sealed, never open, original press, stuff like that, you know. Yeah. And so there was one thing that kind of stuck out, and I'm not going to say what it was for various reasons, so I'm going to make up something similar to it. We will say it was that's not a great example now that I think about it. We will say it was... I'm trying to think of an example. Oh, here's a good example. We will say, well, that's not a great example either. Give me a second here. I will come up with my example. We will say that it was, that's not a great example. I'll find it. Give me a second here. We will say that it, here we go.
Okay, let's hear it.
No, that's a terrible example, too.
Oh, no.
Damn it. All right, well, I'll go with my first example, which isn't a great example, but it'll work. So the example that I'm about to give is not the record that I got. So I'm making up this record, and you'll see why in a second. So let's say the record was Minor Threat's first 7-inch, except for it's not Minor Threat's first 7-inch. It's a version of Minor Threat's first 7-inch, except for all the curse words have been removed for radio playing. And it's might be a one of a kind thing, or if it's not one of a kind, it's like maybe one of five or something, or quite possibly a college DJ took the record, took a normal record to this place and had the place made a bleeped acetate, and the record itself is pressed by a service that doesn't exist anymore, where they make test press acetates or bleeped records. Like that's what they do, is you go to them and they'll make you a record for radio play right now.
Right.
If you look on Discogs, every record there is an official record. Let's say there was a Fear record with the F word in it. Like they've made it a Fear record, but they bleeped the F word, and it is clearly made by Slash Records. I think that's who put out the first Fear record, or whoever did, right? Or maybe it was Warner or whatever. So the record that I quote found, it's the Minor Threat first 7-inch, except for it's a weird or unusual version where all the F words have been bleeped. And it says Minor Threat bleeped version, right?
Right.
And so there's no record of this record. There's no record of this record anywhere on Discogs or anywhere on the internet. It's an extremely rare item, possibly even rarer than a test press, because test presses often have 10, 20 or so. This might be the only one. So either it is a bootleg made by some college DJ, or it's a legit thing made by the record company specifically to test to giving out to radio stations, what they never actually did. And if I have to bet, I think it's the latter, because every other record in the collection definitely is a legitimate non-college DJ record, you know, like a sealed Madonna record, a sealed Gang of Four record. You know, that's not a college DJ type thing, you know. And so I was going to email, quote, Ian MacKay, say, hey, Ian, is this a real thing? But then I thought, A, he probably gets those kinds of questions all the time, and it's probably annoying. And then B, I thought, well, he might actually want it, you know, because he doesn't have one, you know, and it's a history. And Ian, famously, he's not a record collector, but he's an archivist, and he likes to keep, quote, records of all the stuff that he's done, you know. So this is a very unique thing, you know. And I would say, well, I won't email him because I don't want to annoy him. But I thought, like, if he wanted it, like, I would definitely give it to him, even though I don't want to. Like, I don't want to be, like, one of those creeps – that like loves the record, but like despises the musician or sees the musician almost as like a tool for my enjoyment, like not as a person, as like an object, right. You know, like yeah. I'll give a great example is famously Blowfly was a great parody dirty blues singer. In the 80s, when he was absolutely broke, he sold his entire catalog to this guy called Harry Stone for literally like $10,000, right? Literally, like a year later. So this must have been like the late 90s, actually. Literally, like 3 months later or a year later, Beyonce sampled one of the tracks and made that sample worth millions and millions of dollars and the publishing worth even more, right?
Right.
So whereas Blowfly literally would have been set for life off that one sample, because samples in the 90s were massively worthwhile, Beyonce, the publishing, is this guy Harry Stone got this incredible multi-million dollar windfall, right? And so, you know, business is business, and I get it. And so I don't think Harry Stone would necessarily have to give Blowfly that money. But, you know, Harry Stone made millions of dollars in publishing. He could give him Blowfly 50 grand to save his house, 100 grand to save his house, 10%. You know, that's reasonable, you know, but he didn't, you know, that's like a thing. Mm-hmm. Then Harry Stone, like, does this creepy thing is he puts out a bunch of Blowfly reissues and it says, the legendary Harry Stone presents Blowfly. And it's like, that's like sick. Like you're strangling the guy that made the music, but you apparently like the music itself, which is a weird, weird dynamic. You see what I'm saying? Like, he loves the music, but he has almost a contempt or a nonchalance towards the guy that made the music, which is weird, you know?
Yeah, that's gross.
So anyways, so if quote Ian MacKaye asked me for this record, I would give it to him because I'd feel bad about not giving it to him. You know, I actually had a similar thing once is I came across the Chimp Eats Banana demo tape, which is Chumbawamba before they were Chumbawamba. And I emailed Dan Burt of Chumbawamba to verify it. And he's like, that's the real thing. That's because there's only – they made 100 of them in 1979 in Armley, UK. And somehow well, I'll tell the story of how I got it some other time. It's actually a pretty crazy story. So it's like this – I mean, how many of them exist anymore? Maybe 10, maybe, you know? And I got one of them, and I said, is this the real thing? And he's like, yeah. And then I was scared to ask him, but I know I had to ask him. I'm like, do you have one? And he said, yeah, I think there's one in my mom's house in England or whatever. I was like, because I didn't want to give it up, you know?
Right.
So the situation I have now is I've got this incredibly rare, unique record. Do you think I should email the guy and say, do you want this record? Like, am I morally obligated to? Should I or shouldn't I? Or did I put in the work and I found it and I get to keep it? What do you think?
How positive are you that it's like real?
70%.
Okay. I don't think that you need to send an email unless you're like 85% or higher, because it doesn't really make sense to be like, hey, do you know about this thing that could be a bootleg? I think if you that's what I think.
Fair enough. So you say leave sleeping dogs lie. Interesting. Yeah. I probably will, honestly, just because it's like really cool. I'll tell you about what it is after the podcast is over. It's pretty cool. But it just goes to show people the record hunt is always exciting and cool. But I don't want to be one of these creeps that like cherishes the artifact but not the person. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'll never forget this guy had Johnny Thunder's boots in his closet. Like, I've got Johnny Thunder's boots in my closet. It's like, well, that's just a pair of boots. Like, who gives you, like, yeah, Johnny Thunder's the man, but it's just some guy's boots. He's not magical. You know, it's just kind of weird. Yeah.
Anyways, he's not in the boots.
Yeah, right. But also, like, there's the thing is some of these guys will go to, like, you know, punk rocks that don't have a whole lot of money, and they'll like buy all their stuff and kind of make them beg for their life. And you know, you don't want to be that kind of guy. No. You know, I've been tempted to email some musicians here and there, but I thought, nah, that's a bridge too far. I'd rather just, you know, find stuff at the record convention or in the record store or whatever. You know, like contacting people directly is kind of odd. You know. So anyways, yeah. I don't know, just food for thought. I don't have the answer. Em, should we play a song or should we hit the news right away? What do you want to do?
Let's play a song. Let's have a transition.
What are we playing?
Are we playing something that we're going to talk about?
Sure.
Let's play Found by Fucked Up.
All right. And we'll be right back.
Song is of town.
And we're back. And I wasn't going to talk about that first, but since we played, let's talk about that first. And then we'll talk about one of the biggest stories of the week. And more. F'd Up, they got a new album coming out. It's called One Day. I think they said it was recorded in one day, but I think that's not true. I think that's one of those inside F'd Up jokes that you don't really understand at all, you know? This record is in stark contrast to Dose Your Dreams, which was a massive double LP, and also Year of the Horse was a massive double LP, and also the amazing, amazing, amazing Oberon 12-inch EP, which I loved. Oberon was like hard, dark, heavy, kind of like Neurosis, kind of like Negative Approach. Just super. I was thrilled by that EP. The new record seems to be more in line with perhaps Glass Boys or even like Glass Boy. It's got kind of a very positive, or maybe David Comes to Life. It's got a very positive, bright sound, whereas Oberon was very dark and Ear of the Horse was very trippy, you know? I was annoyed at F'd Up because I bought the first 7-inch before they announced the record, paid shipping. Then they're like, we got a new 7-inch coming out. I bought that. And then they were like, we got an album coming out and you can buy all three things at a discount and also save on shipping. I was like, thanks. Thanks a lot. That was real cool. Anyways. F'd Up is back to being mega prolific again. They were always honestly a prolific band, but I would say they're back to being far more prolific than your average band. Edmore, did you dig the new track? And what's your stance on F'd Up in 2022? A band at this point that has been a band for I think 20 years, which is insane to think about. If F'd Up was if F'd Up was Rancid, then they would currently be releasing, let's see, like Troublemaker or something, which is crazy to think about. Or if they were like the Rolling Stones, they would be releasing Tattoo You right now, which is crazy.
That's really cool. I love Fucked Up. I think they're great. I'm always excited for new material, new songs. Like the Oberon EP was outstanding. It rocked. Year of the Horse was amazing too. So they released the title track for One Day when they announced the album like a little while ago, and I didn't like that song. It just like it didn't really click. Like it was okay, but it wasn't like the best. It was kind of on the fence about it. And then this one, it was like it clicked more and I really liked the song. And maybe it's just because now I know kind of what to expect. So it's not like, it's not going to be another Oberon. It's not going to be another like Dose Your Dreams. It's not going to like get all like crazy, like Year of the Horse. It's going to be more like, well, not, it's going to be more kind of, it's going to be weird, but in a different way, I guess, like not as far out there. But yeah, like the song is great. Damien sounds like awesome. I'm looking forward to this album now. I was again, like on the fence because I didn't really like the first single, but now it's like, I think it's going to be good.
Well, there you have it. I think it's going to be shitty. No, I'm kidding. I love that stuff. I definitely like the heavier, weirder stuff. I thought The Horse was amazing. I thought Oberon was amazing. I know a lot of people kind of like the more college rocky version of the band. David Comes to Life, as much praise that got, I wasn't blown away by that. I thought Chemistry Common Life was amazing. I thought David Comes to Life was a bit more sedate. This new record is interesting. It's got that bright sound, but Damien sounds like really great, really energetic. And so, I mean, I think it's going to be a cool record. I mean, no matter what, it's going to be at least good. But cool thing about F'd Up is they put out so much stuff, and it's always fun to keep chasing them and see what they got coming out next. I wonder, there's always a thing is what's the status of F'd Up, And so I wonder what is the status of F'd Up? Like, are they like a functioning band now, or is it just like is it just Mike Halichuk's project and the other people contribute? Like, I wonder. Or maybe that's not even an interesting conversation anymore. I mean, it's already been had 1,000 times. Maybe it isn't. Maybe we should just say this is what we're going to get, and then F'd Up is kind of in line is with the kind of band they are. F'd Up is a band that defies definition. Is it a band? Is it a project? It's just like this amorphous, ambiguous thing that puts out cool records, and maybe that's the way it should be. I just really hope. I really, 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 really hope they finish the Zodiac. How many Zodiacs are we up to now? I mean, I really hope. Let's see. Let's count them up right now. Like, I think they're getting. I remember when they were joking when they were done three. They're like, we're halfway to halfway, and like it seemed like in the insurmountable mountain. And now they're like kind of getting close. So Year of the Horse is one. Let's see. Year of the Dog is two. Year of the Pig is three.
Year of the Dragon.
It's Year of the Rat is four. Year of the Ox is five. Let's see here.
Year of the Dragon.
Year of the Dragon is six. Year of the Tiger is seven. Year of the Hare is eight. Year of the Snake is nine. So we only got three left. Did I do horse already?
Yeah.
Yes, we got. We only have three left. I mean, I really hope they make it. You know.
I hope so. Oh, that'd be so good. Be funny if the next one's just like, the shortest. Like every song is like 50 seconds or 30 seconds or something, because Year of the Horse was so long. They just do like the complete opposite for the next one.
I think that would be super rad and super experimental and super clever and very cool. Would you prefer to do that on a 7-inch, a 12-inch, or something like a 3-inch? What would you say?
I'm not that familiar with vinyl, so I'd probably go 7-inch.
I say 12-inch just because they would all fit together on the shelf, you know?
Okay.
So anyways, we'll see. Anyway, F'd Up, always an exciting, always a cool band, despite the fact that I think Mike Halachuk doesn't like us, although Damien likes us, and Sandy likes us. I think Ben Cook might be on the fence. He used to like us, but I'm not sure. Let's see who else. I think the other people are ambivalent. So anyways.
What happened? Is there a beef?
No, nothing happened. I think Halachuk, and this is just me, Halachuk is famously a kind of odd guy and a difficult person to There's definitely no beef. Halachuk is famously a hard guy to define and understand. And I think he feels as though Punk News' interviews, my interviews, are too simplistic and perhaps read things too literally. And by trying to define or analyze the band, it strips away some of the magic. That's just my general guess, you know.
Interesting. So,
We'll see. Anyway, I love the band. I think they're definitely one of the coolest punk bands ever. Anyways, speaking about cool punk bands, and more some discourse and some back and forth debate with regards to Punk Rock Bowling. Bowling 2023 has announced its 2023 lineup. Bands headlining Punk Rock Bowling: Rancid, Bad Religion, and Dropkick Murphys. Main headliners: Damned, L7, Suicidal Tendencies, Interrupters, and also other bands playing Me Versus the Gimme Gimmes, Face to Face, GBH, Exploited, Fishbone, Agnostic Front, Cotney Rejects, Slackers, Surfboard, Susie Moon, Sloppy Seconds, The Crowd, Doki Doki, THOL, if I didn't say that, The Chisel, Hepcat, and other bands. Club dates will be announced in early 2023. The main discourse back and forth was some people were saying, well, it's a quote cool lineup, but not an interesting lineup. All these bands have played Punk Rock Bowling before, and so there's no special way. There's no cool reunion. There's no band doing, you know, an album they've never done before. There's nothing super unique or interesting. It's just bands that people have seen before that are quote famous. The other stance is that it's kind of the band reestablishing itself. Of course, Sean and Mark Stern split, and so now it's only one Stern brother running Punk Rock Bowling. So this could be considered, we're Punk Rock Bowling. We're giving you the kind of bands that you always wanted, and here they are. You know, and so people were going back and forth. I previously bought the ticket before they announced the lineup, and I booked my hotel before they had the lineup. But I'm interested in your take on this. What do you think of this lineup?
There were some bands that was like, oh, that's really great to see them on there. Like, that's really fun. That's really cool. Like the Damned and L7 and like GBH and Surfboard and like Susie Moon and Doki Doki. Like, there's a lot of like really, really cool bands. But yeah, with the headliners and stuff, it's like Rancid, Bad Religion, and Dropkick Murphys kind of headline everything. So it's like, it makes sense, I guess. I don't really like Rancid, so that it's just kind of like, okay, it fits the brand. Like, Rancid's been there for forever and whatever, so like that makes sense. And I could see them having that lineup to reestablish themselves as like, this is who we are Punk Rock Bowling. We don't need the other people who left. We are on our own. We're standing on our own. This is great. Woo, kind of thing. Nothing's going to change. So I think for part of the lineup, they have that. And then for another part, they are getting like newer bands and different bands that are doing really exciting things like Surfport and Doki Doki, like in and giving them like some space. I think like Bad Religion would still be cool. Like, I think they're still like an interesting draw. Cause like, don't they do like different sets every time, right? Like that.
Maybe.
And like Dropkick Murphys are like, I don't know. I've never seen them live. I guess they're fun. Get ready for drinking songs and bouncing around. Yeah, what did you think of the lineup?
Yeah, I was a little underwhelmed. I would have liked for like the past 2 years, like who should play punk rock bowling? Who should play punk rock bowling? And people, of course, said Bad Religion, Rancid. But also people kind of like I said, David Johansen does all New York Dolls. You know, and I was like, oh, I hope they book David Johansen. This is how out of touch I'm. Like, oh my god, maybe they'll book David Johansen. It's quite sad. New York Dolls and David Johansen are not nearly as famous as they should be. They really aren't, you know. So like I would also, Madness was supposed to play Punk Rock Bowling 2020, but that was
great.
Delayed due to COVID. And the new Punk Rock Bowling the next year had Circle Jerks, Descendants, and Devo, which was amazing. And so I was hoping that Madness was going to be there, just because it's been like they announced Madness, and but no Madness. It was Rancid. I mean, I've seen Dropkick Murphys once or even twice, and it was, man, it just seemed so cheesy to me. Like, I was not into it, man. Like, it was, it's like, this is the song about your friends, and when you're feeling bad, you can go to the bar and drink your problems away. I'm like, that's a real healthy message. But then I realized, like, what if Dropkick Murphys are being sinister? And like what if it's like, you should ruin your life, and we're going to tell you why you should, you know.
It's all a conspiracy.
Bad Religion, everyone loves Bad Religion. I just do not care about Bad Religion. I think they're boring. I think they're way overhyped. I don't care about Bad Religion. I just don't. I just think they're not nearly as good as everyone says they are. I just don't get it. Rancid, I like Rancid a lot on record and CD and stuff. I saw Rancid at the Punk Rock Bowling. I thought it was the last Punk Rock Bowling, but actually Rancid hadn't played Punk Rock Bowling since 2019. I might have even seen Rancid one other time. That's how memorable they are. Rancid, I mean, Rancid is good live. They sound good. They're sloppy, but in a good way. I want them to be sloppy. They're a punk band. But I actually kind of got bummed out when I saw Rancid, because like the whole time Lars was like, this song back in 1994 was all over MTV. Who remembers Time Bomb? And like it felt like an oldies act. It felt like they're like. Between every song, they were like, you know, this was back then, and I remember this, and the first time we played this song in Las Vegas, it was a real, like, it felt like they're like, here, we're an old band playing old hits, and here are the old hits, whereas Flag, who are much older than Rancid, just came out and just leveled the place. They didn't be like, who remembers Nervous Breakdown? Who remembers My War? They just came out and destroyed the place and felt like a live, vibrant band. And so why Rancid was kind of good, they were good, they weren't great, but they were good. It felt like an oldies act, and it really kind of bummed me out to a degree. But then again, that's not the worst thing in the world, because there are some very cool acts playing Punk Rock Bowling. Damned. I saw the Damned at Punk Rock Bowling 2019, I guess it was, and they were so, so good. There they did all – see, here's the weird thing is, at that Punk Rock Bowling, the Damned's big thing is we're doing all of Machine Gun Etiquette. And some of the other bands did like full – like, you would think they'd do like full album announcements because people like that and I like that. But here it's just going to be a Damned set, which will be cool. L7, I'm psyched to see. But also, I guess I was surprised by some of the smaller bands, for example – Surfport, super psyched to see Surfport. Sloppy Seconds, super psyched to see Sloppy Seconds. The Crowd, somewhat obscure 80s OC Oxnard band. I believe they're Oxnard. Very great band. I'm excited to see them. Suzy Moon, Doki Doki. So also Slackers. Always great to see Slackers. Yeah. I was kind of on the fence. I'm like, well, maybe I'll just not go. But honestly, the tickets are pretty cheap. I actually got I got the discount, like $160 tickets. Now that I'm up to $200, but you know, I mean, it's always a fun weekend. I'm not blown away, but what I was gonna say is, I'm definitely going to see Rancid. Bad Religion, I'm probably going to skip. Dropkick Murphys, I'm almost definitely going to skip. But the cool thing is, punk rock bowling also often has really cool club shows. I have no inside information whatsoever, but maybe Damned will have a club show. That would be pretty cool. But then I thought to myself, I've seen Damned in the club. Why is that so special? However, at punk rock bowling, the clubs are like really small, like 150, 200 people, whereas normally Damned do like 400, 500 people. So it's kind of smaller. Although the first time I saw the Damned at more 100 person capacity club, which was kind of cool.
That's really cool.
But at any rate, you know, maybe Surfboard will do a club show. And sometimes they bring in some really cool surprise bands to do the club shows too. So I'm most likely going to go. It's going to be a fun weekend. Oh, the point I was making though is, is so if say the Damned play or Interrupters play and there's a cool club show and you've been out there for 10 hours, and actually put a star next to that too. You've been there for 10 hours, Bad Religion's playing, and then there's some cool club shows. That little hour break, you can go back to your hotel and like refuel for like an hour, just chill out. That hour is like essential. Like even if you're dead tired, that 1 hour, that gets you charged back up. You can make it through your 3-4 hour club show and have a great time at the club rather than being tired at the club. So sometimes at punk rock bowling, because there are extremely awesome club shows, sometimes it's really not so bad that you can skip the main one if the bands before that are cool. You know, Damned, L7, and even Interrupters, I really do want to see them. And so it can be good. I'm not blown away by this lineup. But for me, because of Dan, because of Susie Moon, because of Surfboard, because of Sloppy Seconds is the band that's getting me to fly out. Like, that was definitely the one that pushed it over the line. I love Sloppy Seconds. They don't tour that much. They very rarely tour the East Coast. I'm going to see them. I'm most likely going to go. I wasn't thrilled. I was hoping it would be a little bit more punch to it. But listen, I wonder if this somewhat blasé lineup, the headliners, that is, I wonder if that's by design or if they just couldn't book like the surprise whammies, you know. But you think they could? I mean, you think, I don't know, you think they could come up with at least one surprise whammy? Like, I think if they had one surprise whammy, then people would have been blown away. Like, if it was like Rancid, Bad Religion, and Dave Johansen, the New York Dolls, or Rancid, Bad Religion, and like Jello Biafra, you know what I mean? Because he hasn't played Bumper Bung, I think, ever.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. Or even like Flag, you know, or even Off, you know. I don't think Off a headline, though. But I guess Circle Jerks played last year, so that might be too much. But like, I think if they had like one unexpected whammy, then I think people's reaction would have been way better. So I'm just curious as to why there isn't one whammy here. Or even like, you know, Rancid doing all of And Out Come the Wolves. That would be like a huge deal, even though they play all those songs anyways, you know. or Rancid doing all of Rancid 2000. You think they would have figured out something special, but you know.
Well, so maybe,
I don't know. Go ahead.
Maybe that's coming. Maybe the surprise will be like the second wave lineup. Maybe they're just holding back.
Well,
and then it'll be bam.
Unlike Fest, Punk Rock Bowling doesn't really do waves. Like, they do announce more bands, but it's usually smaller bands. The club shows is usually what like the surprise is. However, that being said, according to Punk Rock Bowling, all the VIP passes are sold out. So maybe it was the right move, you know. And also, they say they say the Golden Nugget is almost completely booked. Doesn't matter to me because I recommend El Cortez. one last thing I did want to mention is, you know, talking about the 10-hour day or whatever. So Punk Rock Bowling is going to be in the old parking lot, not the new parking lot. I really, really hope they put down the grass like they did with the new parking lot. Like, I hope it's not just a parking lot, because that's brutal, man. You're out there, the sun's bouncing off the parking lot. You can't really sit down, or if you can, but it's like super not comfortable. They have like this fake grass they put down at Punk Rock Bowling in the new parking lot. And it makes you feel like you're on a field, except for kind of better because you don't get muddy or anything. So I really hope they do that. It makes it so much more pleasurable and fun, you know. So, anyways, that's Punk Rock Bowling. And more tells about Natalie and the Monarchy.
Yeah. Okay. So Natalie and the Monarchy, they're based out of Manchester, UK, but the lead singer was born in the US, and they kind of mix like Riot Girl and grunge and like kind of like the cabaret vibe. So I hadn't heard of this band before, and like I found out about them on social media because they just released a video for their new single Brick Wall View, and the video is directed or was filmed, edited, and animated by Jen of Broken Down Golf Cart. So Broken Down Golf Cart are really cool. You should check them out. They have really cool like animated videos that like Jen does. And they have a really cool sound. And she also plays in Tits Up. And Tits Up are really good. If you haven't checked them out, check them out. I interviewed them. Go read it. But yeah, so that's what led me to this. And like the video is super cool. It's a mix of live action, stop motion, and then like cartoon animation. So it's like somebody's walking around and their head and their hair are stop motion, but their body is like their real body. Like they're really like walking around, interacting with things. And then this cartoon like ghost is following them, and the ghost turns into a bigger figure, like a person, and then the ghost becomes real and it's a person, and it's really cool. So like the video, that's what it is. And the song itself is pretty neat. There's a part like Natalie's voice is great. I really really like it, how she sounds. And then there's a part kind of near the end when the song like alternates between like quieter and softer, and then it gets louder and angrier and goes back to like quieter and softer and alternates. And then it goes into like the carnival kind of cabaret, like bump bump like thing. And it's like slows down. That is my favorite part of the song. It just sounds so cool and it comes out of nowhere. And I like how it's just like, you think, oh, like it's a straightforward song. Yeah, yeah, like it's neat, it's cool, whatever. And then it gets to that and it's like, hello, what's going on here? It's just cool. I like when things you're not necessarily expecting get thrown in. And yeah, it sounds great. So this is our newest single. And they released a single earlier this year called Jesus Billboard Saves the Day. Whoops, which is also kind of neat. And they have a handful of singles that they released last year. John, what did you make of Natalie and the Monarchy?
Yeah, I dug the track. It's got kind of a gothy vibe, which I'm always about. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I thought the video was really cool. I don't think I've ever seen a video where they superimpose claymation on top of live action like that.
Yeah.
That's like pretty cool. I actually thought this video was pretty neat and I dug it and I thought it was rad. And I think people should check it out. Let's see one last story and then Abba will play Natalie the Monarchy. Thin Lizzy. Thin Lizzy yes. is re-releasing a deluxe version of the famous Live and Dangerous album. The listeners all know Thin Lizzy, but Live and Dangerous is considered one of the most iconic live rock albums of all time in the 70s, which was the era of the fantastic live rock album. It's a great live album. Thin Lizzy sounds great. They sound like Thin Lizzy. The new version is 8 CDs. And they take all 6 shows used to compile the 2 LP. So there's shows in London, Toronto, and Philadelphia. So you can hear the full show of every show that was cherry-picked to make the album. So at first I was like, this is unnecessary. This is stupid. No one wants – I mean, do I need to hear The Boys Are Back in Town 6 different times in almost identical or even identical versions? But then I realized, no, you're just being kind of a creep, John, because like if it was the Rolling Stones or Black Flag or Circle Jerks or Misfits or Bowie or Iggy Pop – and I like Thin Lizzy a lot. I'm a big fan, not a massive fan. But if it was Black Flag or Thin Lizzy – I mean Misfits or whoever, I'd be like, yeah, let's get it all out there. And that way you can listen to it if you want to. So – So is this excessive? Maybe, but it's one of the most seminal live albums of all time. So why not document the hell out of it? And if you're a mega fan, you can listen to all the slight variations like I did with the awesome Iggy Pop Bowie Years box set, which comes with like 3 or even 4 live albums. And they're all mostly the same, basically, but it's still cool to listen to. So it's cool. I guess just the question is, what's the price going to be? It was like $100 or something. I say that's cool. It was like one of these $300 box sets. I'm like, that's gouging. So the thing that we see these days now with box sets is record labels realize that only the most hardcore fans are buying stuff, so they gouge you. You know, with the Joe Strummer box set, do you want to buy 4 albums that you already have so you can get the demo record, which is just demos and the lazy that we can put out? You got to give us $400, you know, or whatever it is, you know. So If it's reasonably priced, I think it's super rad. I just hope it doesn't follow the recent trend of gouging the most hardcore fans. So I think it's cool. And more. What do you think of Thin Lizzy? And what band would you like to see have basically the same show, but like three or four times, just so you can hear every version? The Ramones also famously did that with their It's Alive album, which I'm glad they did, because it's one of the most classic live albums of all time. So it's cool that you can get all the shows used to make that album. And more. Take it away.
Yes. Okay. I'll start with Thin Lizzy, and then I'll go into like the band that I'd like to hear. They're really cool because they're a band that's played on the radio a lot. So I know a lot about them because of that. And it's like they're part of the soundtrack of my early years kind of thing, because that's what it was. It was like listening to the radio in the car all the time. So they do have like a special place that way. I hadn't heard this album before, so I listened to a bit of it today just on YouTube, and it's pretty cool. It's really neat. 8 CDs is excessive, but it would be cool to hear the differences between the shows, and if they played differently to an American crowd than to a Canadian crowd, which I don't think they would, but like it's always interesting just to see and hear it. So I think it's great. Again, I don't think that it should be super expensive. I think it should be like, I agree with what you're saying with like the price gouging thing. Like, yeah, people take advantage of people's like love for bands and just run with it, and it's gross. So don't exploit that, record labels who are totally listening. It's all well and good. There are people who are going to be super stoked about this. I think it's cool. I probably won't buy it because it's a little too much Thin Lizzy for me, but it's cool. The one band that I would do, like I would get the 8 CD set 100% would be My Chemical Romance, because like if they release live or any live stuff from their reunion tour, every night is different. Like they do a different set each night, everything like changes. Like it would be really cool to hear what songs they played, and then it'd be really cool if they release like the Toronto show that I was at, because it's like, yeah, like I remember all of this and I want to have like it forever kind of thing. So that would be my band. That'd be my like shut up and take my money band.
That's one thing that I'm surprised that I mean, we talked about Live Here Now, or there's on demand CDs. In the age of streaming, it is relatively cheap to record a band live. And for a hot minute, like I remember Rancid did like 20 or 30 shows like that. The Grateful Dead have famously always done it. I would think that more bands with modern technology that makes recording a live show very cheap, I would think that more bands would like release just like a ton of live albums, even if it's digital only. But they just don't. That seems like a lost revenue stream to me. I wonder if it's because streaming income is so low that it's just not worthwhile, or if some bands are, you know, considered that they don't sound quite as good on the record. But on the other hand, like bands like Ween sound amazing live, and they do a totally different show every night. Like Ween should release like every show, and people would buy it. So it just seems like a lost revenue stream. I mean, I'm not sure why bands don't do it. We should ask a band sometime, like why they don't do that. So.
More anyway. Live albums. They're only good.
Indeed. So I agree. Let's play Natalie and the Monarchy doing Brick Wall, and we will be back.
I biked the whole island down to Chinatown today. Man with the flat trap eyes stuck to my thighs, they wait. For time to pop, for the chain to come off, so they can help me up and ask my name. Now I want my hardened bitch, I stabbed a fist in the air.
We are back, and speaking of lost revenue, the Justice Department says they're going to launch an investigation into Live Nation. Apparently, Live Nation has been price gouging. Really?
What?
What? You know, I was like,
you don't say.
I mean, it's sort of laughable, and I'm sort of jaded by this. I remember there were Senate hearings when Live Nation Ticketmaster wanted to join. There were Senate hearings as to whether or not – well, actually, I'll give the whole detail of the story. So basically, okay. Live Nation and Ticketmaster are the subject of a Justice Department investigation. Live Nation and Ticketmaster joined in 2010, and when they joined, they came to an agreement with the Justice Department that Ticketmaster would sell a secondary ticketing company, and it would also license some software from some company. Who gives a shit, you know? Ironically, in 2019, Ticketmaster actually broke some of those rules, and instead of them being punished, the Justice Department was like, fine, we'll just amend our agreement with you. So Ticketmaster didn't get punished at all. Of course, famously, about 4 or 5 years ago, Ticketmaster got zapped with a class action lawsuit where they were literally adding on they had processing fees, venue fees. They had a fee, which literally was just a fee just to give you a fee. Like, it was a fee. It was agreed that it was a fee that was not associated with any expense whatsoever. And the big thing of that was that they got hit with a class action lawsuit, and the only thing that happened was Ticketmaster would give everybody a $2 credit that bought a ticket, and the $2 credits were to like Chase Atkins or Trace Atkins and like Billy Ray Cyrus. It was the most laughable thing. You didn't even get money. You got like a $2 credit to go see Billy Ray Cyrus if you want a show that wasn't even ever sold out. It was just totally laughable. And so, of course, ticketing fees are absolutely – Ticketmaster and Live Nation fees are absolutely obscene. In the 70s and 80s and in the 90s, different medium and sized venues had different owners. Now they're almost all entirely owned by Ticketmaster. The big ones are exclusively controlled by Ticketmaster. Find me a sports arena of a show venue that isn't controlled by Ticketmaster in the U.S. It doesn't exist. It is without question a monopoly. And of no surprise is, like, if you buy a $40 ticket, like, I bought a $4 Ticketmaster ticket not that long ago. The service fees were literally $30. Actually, that's right. It was Roxy Music. I got my $50 Roxy Music ticket, and the final fee was $112.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know? And then, ironically, the show was terribly undersold, and you could buy a ticket for, like, $10 off StubHub, you know? But also, of course, Ticketmaster Live Nation now control the secondary market. And so now on the secondary market, I think, like, for some shows, you can't sell less than face value. So, like, whereas – I mean, the perverse thing is – as a consumer, I was more protected by the guy that would stand outside the show and say, need tickets, need tickets. He would cut me a better deal than Ticketmaster, the federally regulated company. That's how messed up it is. And so, of course, and also the prices of tickets have skyrocketed to an insane amount. Tickets used to be like $45. You know, in the 2000s, like a BC Boys ticket or a Rolling Stones ticket or an Elton John ticket would be $45 to $60. The super nice seats were $150. Now, so the starting fee for those kinds of shows is like $100 to $150, and the tickets go up to like $5,000. It's insane. Of course, famously, Taylor Swift's tickets were selling for like $10,000 through Ticketmaster. And Ticketmaster tried to blame Taylor Swift until she shot back, and they were like, oh, yeah, we totally are. Ticketmaster is just the worst in that, like, they tell you we're screwing you over. Then when people complain, they're like, well, it's Taylor's fault. And then when it totally isn't Taylor's fault, and Taylor's like, no, it's your fault, they're like, oh, that's true. You know, like, it's like, not that I'm here to defending Taylor Swift, but like, they're just the slimiest, most gross company. But in a way, it's our fault in that when tickets shot from $45 to like $200, $250, when parking shot from $10 or $15 to $50 to $60, which it did practically overnight, it's insane how, like, in Camden, in like 2016, parking was $15 at the venue. Now it's $60. That's insane. No. But in a way, it's our fault because people keep buying tickets. Like, all the big shows are sold out. Elton John is sold out. Taylor Swift sold out. You know, Rolling Stones are sold out. So Ticketmaster realized there's no competition, and we can gouge people obscenely, and people just won't say no. They'll still pay us. So in a way, we vote with our dollar, and we haven't, and we've just been taken advantage of. So I can't stand Ticketmaster. I think they're absolutely slimy. I hope this Justice Department breaks them up, but there's not going to be some huge topple of Ticketmaster, in part because the vast majority of senators and Congress people are donated to by Ticketmaster. So Ticketmaster has a lot of them on the leash. So I mean, I'm sad to say, and I hate to be a negative Nancy, but what's probably going to happen is just some nominal slap on the wrists, and Ticketmaster will be like, you're right, we were bad boys. We'll give everyone a $3 credit when they buy a ticket next year. And then ticket prices will just stay as insane they are and go up a little bit in a few years. And I don't see them going up much more than they are now, just because tickets are so insanely priced these days. I don't see them going up more, but maybe I'm wrong. But will this be the destruction of Ticketmaster, which is clearly a monopoly and clearly was a monopoly when they joined with Live Nation, even though the Senate and Congress were like, doesn't look like a monopoly to me. It looks good to me. It's like, well, Senate and Congress are just part of, who else owns all the giant sports stadium? Well, just Ticketmaster Live Nation. So how is that not a monopoly? Oh, they'll be all right. You can trust them, you know. So anyways, I feel very strongly about this. It's garbage. Emily, what do you think?
Oh, well, obviously Ticketmaster, the victims in this story, it's too much. No, it's ridiculous. It's disgusting, and the whole thing bothers me. Like, with the fees, like I think I've said before in the podcast, like, it's so frustrating because, like, you get priced out of things because, like, there's transportation costs, like there's other things going into it, and then it's like, I can't, like, I'm gonna have to sit this one out because I can't, like, afford to spend X amount of dollars, especially when it's like, oh, well, there's a show I can go to, look at it, it's not too bad. And then you get to the checkout and you get the fees and you're like, ah, I'm screwed. Like, you know, it's shitty. Like, it shouldn't happen. Like, right. Like, how do you break people's spirit? You attack, like the culture, you take away what means something to people, right? And that's music for a lot of people. Like, music has a lot of meaning. So if you take it out of people's hands, it's gross. Live music is a wonderful experience. Lots of like community, lots of like really good things comes out of going to see live music. Your mental health benefits.
They don't care about any of that. I mean, they strictly care about money, strictly, you know.
I know, and this is like what they're taking away.
Yeah, fair. Oh, I see. You're detailing the damage they're causing by the monopoly. You're totally correct. Yeah. You're totally correct.
And like, obviously there are places that aren't run by Ticketmaster. Like, there are smaller venues that are still like free from Ticketmaster, and like, that's amazing. Like, I'm not like, you should go support them, but
I'm going to interrupt you. You're totally correct about that, except for at least in Philadelphia and other places, the city government is trying to run those places out and let places like the Ticketmaster that controls the sports team, they never get any grief from the city, and they make way, way, way more money. So you think that the city would be more interested in getting money out of them. But no, they put the squeeze on the small guys just because they're trying to get them out and get these more, you know, wretched companies in, just because they, I guess, bring more money into the city, if you will. You know, it's messed up. It's messed up all around. It's a real bummer.
It really is. It really, really is. I hope this like breaks it up. Like, I know there's not a good probability of that, but I really hope this breaks it up and just sees it for the abuse of power that it is and the monopolization of a market that it is, and dissolves it.
I agree. Now I'm really going to bum out the audience. As annoyed and as gruesome and as sick as Ticketmaster is, what we're seeing happening with Ticketmaster, the general trajectory and general scheme, if you will, by medicine companies, probably times 5 to 10, you know, by telecommunication companies, 5 to 10 times as worse as Ticketmaster. So the only reason why Ticketmaster gets the shot is because it's much more visible. What you don't see is the health companies, which are so much more obscene than Ticketmaster. And I'm not saying as bad as Ticketmaster is, the medicine companies are so much worse. It's the telecommunication companies. It's just messed up all around. And it's happening so much worse than what Ticketmaster is, just because you don't see it, you know. It's a bummer. I don't know what we can do about it aside from voting in elections and voting down this kind of stuff. The problem is all these senators and congressmen are owned by these giant medicine companies, telecommunication companies, Ticketmaster, and so forth. They got them in their pocket after Citizens United. So I don't know what you can do about it. It's a bummer and it sucks. So anyways, here's something that doesn't suck. Pauline Black has received the OBE, the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. Basically, it's basically the British Empire says, you've done a great job of contributing to the England's art scene or other stuff like that. So she issued a statement and she just said, I just want to say a personal thank you to the people who wish me well on my journey over the past couple of days. None so more than my lovely friend in music for more than 40 years, Rhoda Dakar, also a two-tone fame. My sister Yvonne Adenel and my beautiful niece Rhoda Adenel, who accompanied me to Windsor Castle on Wednesday, 16th of November, and women of color representing, and of course King Charles III, not Prince Charles, but King Charles, gave her the medal, and now she is an official recipient of that high honor. I think it's cool. I think it's cool that Pauline is getting a nod. I mean, honestly, like, Selector's a pretty cool band. They just did a reissue of the first record like last year. It's really cool, and Selector probably doesn't get quite enough props that it should get, because I mean, honestly, I think you're kind of as good as the Specials, to tell you the truth. At any rate, so the question is, though, lot of artists refuse the OBE for numerous reasons. Like, A, you don't get to determine if I'm cool or not, or B, I don't think England's that cool, so I don't want a medal from you. Do you think that it's cool that Pauline received this medal, or should she have refused the medal?
I think it's really cool that she received the medal. Like, she's done so much, she deserves some like large scale recognition, and I think it's great. Like, I understand people refusing it, and I think that if that's how you feel, then 100% I support you in that decision to refuse it, because you'll always have that you were nominated for that. I don't think that the OBE is like the marker of if you've had a good life or not or whatever. Like, I think it's nice to see people recognized in kind of any way. Like, she could have gotten like a trophy from a like local business, and that still would have been really cool because it's recognizing like her for what she did. And this is just at a massive scale, and that's amazing because more people now will like find out about the Slachter and check them out and check out everything that she's done and like books she's written, and it's all good things.
Em, if you got called up and King Charles was like, King Charles here, Em, I'd like to give you the MVD for your excellent interviews. Would you come get one from Charles?
I would, because I think it would be cool, but I would have like a very, I'd try to make like a statement somehow, because I don't like him. It's like, thank you for this honor. I don't respect you.
So you would get it or you wouldn't get it?
I would get it. I would just.
But you like diss him when he was giving it to you.
Yes.
Bold move. Okay, let's see. We just got a couple of quick stories here. Sloppy Seconds and Queers are releasing a split 7-inch. This follows the just released Sloppy Seconds 7-inch. The one that was just released was Sloppy Seconds and Anti-Scene. Sloppy Seconds released a track from their last album, and the new split 7-inch, Sloppy Seconds and the Queers. Again, Sloppy Seconds is reissuing a track from the last album. This time, they're releasing a cover of Sweet's Action. The Queer B-side, as far as I can tell, is a brand new B-side, or not B-side, the Queer side is a brand new side, and it's the Queers covering Julie Doesn't Live Here Anymore by Electric Light Orchestra, which is a very interesting choice because that in of itself is an obscure B-side only track from 1981, not necessarily Electric Light Orchestra's most famous era, and it's not even on an album, it's just a super obscure B-side. So I think that's cool. I mean, I'm not an anti the Queers. I'm not a huge Queers fan either. I just think it's cool that if they're doing a cover, they're doing something totally unexpected, and of course the Queers don't sound like ELO at all, so they're probably going to radically transform it. Again, with Sloppy Seconds, it's cool. Their cover of Action is awesome, but there are some pretty rare Sloppy Seconds tracks out there. So I wish they would just put that on a 7-inch instead of, just putting out very common stuff that's not hard to find.
Yeah. Give people the rare stuff.
There you have it. Give people the rare stuff. That's what M says. Last story of the day. The Misfits, quite surprisingly, yesterday, or was it today? It was late last night, early this morning. The Misfits have canceled their New Year's Eve show. And that's a big surprise because that's over a month away. So, you know, often a band will cancel a show a few days beforehand because somebody's sick or something. But this is a month and a half away. They canceled the New Year's Eve show. It's got to be a big deal for and Circle Jerks for opening when another band was playing. It's got to be a big deal for the Misfits to cancel that show because, A, any Misfits show is going to be a multi-million-dollar operation. The rumor was that when the Misfits first reunited, Danzig and Jerry only got either $1 million each or $500,000 each plus merch. At this point, I'm thinking it's probably still at that or maybe even higher. Plus, the Misfits merch is in, like, I said this is twice. Last time I saw it was in Philadelphia. $50 t-shirts, $60 t-shirts, $100 or $200 posters flying off the shelf. Just flying off the shelf. They probably double or even triple their money from merch alone. So for the Misfits to cancel any show is a big friggin' deal. There is a thing called tour insurance where if a band has to cancel something. But I wonder if they lose money because, of course, they had the venue booked. So I don't exactly know how that works at that scale. Like maybe the venue pays them or maybe they pay the venue. Or maybe does the venue essentially get a door deal or do the Misfits just rent out the place? I don't know how that works. It's actually probably much more complicated than that. And there's probably way more factors and stuff. But I mean, one would think they would take a loss by having to cancel the show. The reason the Misfits gave was very brief and somewhat oblique. They said, "It is with regret that due to an unexpected personal matter, the Misfits are unable to perform our show in Las Vegas on December 31st. We look forward to hopefully seeing you at a show in 2023. Refunds are available at point of purchase." And of course, in the Misfits fandom, the Misfits Facebook, there are all these wild theories, you know. and I don't want to beat them up too much, but like some of these Misfits fans, Misfits are one of my favorite bands of all time. But some of these Misfits fanboys are just like the most pusillanimous people I've ever met. I'm going to read some of them while I pull it up. And people are doing wild speculation about what happened. Some people saying, oh, well, Mrs. must not be getting along. I hope everyone is okay health-wise. I would think that because it's a month and a half ahead of time, it's not a health thing. You know what I mean? Because, like you can't plan to be sick a month and a half from now, you know. But so here's some of the statements. It looks like in the Misfits fan group, like they're deleting a bunch of them. Is what they like if you say anything remotely bad about Danzig, it looks like they deleted it all. Damn it!
Here we go.
A lot of people bummed that because a lot of people bought like plane tickets and hotels and stuff. Oh, sure. And I saw some people were like, oh, you know, I can't get my hotel refund. That's stupid. Like hotels, you can almost always unbook a hotel as long as it's like 2 or 3 days in advance. I don't believe that, but plane ticket is something different, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm going to see if I can find some of these. Why I look for these wacky quotes that it's not a more enviable side of me, and why I revel in these stupid quotes. I really shouldn't, but I do. And why don't you talk about what you think it is, or what you think the situation is, if I can find some of these quotes in the meantime. Meanwhile, Morrissey has canceled 2 or 3 shows in a row due to health reasons. I almost went to see Morrissey when I was out in L.A. I saw he was only 8 minutes from me, but it was a sold-out show, and I was going to buy tickets, but it was like $175 resale. I'm like, well, I'm going to see him in a couple of weeks. That's a lot of money just to see more. You know, I'm going to see him, not that long. So I decided not to go, and he came out and did 7 songs and left. And so thank God I didn't go, because I don't think you get a refund at that, but you only get like 7 measly songs, like 30 minutes. You know what I mean? So anyway, Morris has been canceling a bunch of shows too, as is his style. So I don't know if you have any commentary on that.
Well, I think the Misfits, I hope everyone's okay and all that, and their families are doing well and everyone is good. But I really think that the reason they canceled is because Jerry Only's solo album just took off, and he had to, he's announcing a world tour. That's my theory.
That's good. I agree. Let's see here. Oh man, I wish this guy wrote this really creepy thing. Like he kept calling him Mr. He's like, Mr. Danzig is smarter than everyone, and he knows what he's doing. And I'm like, this is creepy. Oh. Damn, I wish I could find this. M, talk about something. Give me 2 minutes to see if I can find this. Talk about something, and then I'll see if I can find these dumb quotes.
So that's my theory for the Misfits cancellation. With Morrissey, I don't know. Like, just getting on stage and playing 7 songs, like, that's really, really crappy. Like, he knows, right? Like, he must know how much, like, people adore him still, even when it's not founded anymore. Like, and just go and kind of like flip him off, you know, like, oh yeah, give me an evening of your time and I'm gonna like, we're going to have a good experience. And then it's just like, I don't want to be here, I'm leaving, kind of thing. Which, I mean, like, if you don't want to do it, just don't book it in the first place. Find like another avenue. If that's not your interest anymore, like playing live. But yeah, I think that, again, I hope everyone is well, not wishing anyone like any ill will, but I don't know. There is something up with that one too.
So he's one of the not quite as dumb quotes, but it may not be all about the money. He's basically retired or retiring, right? I would be. I'm sure he's sitting on enough to say, well, what I've got in the bank is fine, but the bills are paid, and I know where my next meal is coming from. Like many of us, someday maybe. But paying out royalties to every single member of his bands is just a headache and a half. We're fans, sure. We want everything. But from his shows, it could require years of legal wrangling just to get everyone on the same page. And you know someone always wants more of this or that. Total headache. You can't please all the people all the time. You just can't. We have what he's given us, and I don't think it's designed that he hasn't released this or that. But what this guy, a human being, remember, has given us is art.
Wow, like, that, okay.
I really wish I could find, let me see if I can find, the other one was just even more like, like the guy's like, Mr. Danzig, he's like, Mr. Danzig is the smartest man in the world and he knows what he's doing. And we all just need to appreciate that he's smarter than us. And and I think he's a massive Danzig fan. I honestly just hope it's like not something like serious. Like even if Danzig and Jerry Only are fighting, I don't care about that, but I hope it's not like something more serious than that, which it could be, you know.
Well, yeah, I guess still like they're older. Too.
Let's see here.
Again, hopefully it's not. Hopefully it's just something like maybe something to do with the venue like fell through and they're like, oh shoot.
I think in that case they would blame the venue like off the bat. They're like, it's those dick bags, not us. But they're like, it's a personal issue. You know, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I guess I can't find any more dumb Danzig dumb quotes by Danzig fans. And you know, I'm on my high horse saying, oh, I'm better than these Danzig guys. I'm a smart guy, but here I am following Danzig's every move and saying, oh, I hope we come back to Philadelphia. Anyway, that about wraps the show up. And what should we play?
Something by the Selector.
Yeah, good idea. All right, fantastic idea. Any last comments to the listeners?
You know, if you can afford it, there's lots of GoFundMes for the families of the victims of the shooting in Colorado. So go do that. Don't give up the fight, and that's that.
And this is the Selector, and we will see you next week.